This podcast is for Weatherby Resources Hospice Compliance Network members only. Good afternoon. I'm Melanie Hill for Weatherby's Hospice Compliance Network podcast, and we are excited to welcome you to our first extensive podcast. We did a welcome podcast a couple of weeks ago, but now we're here with some awesome content today that we believe affects and will help all of our members going forward, because we're going to talk about the new role of the physician assistant in hospice. And so Carrie Cooley, our CEO, is here to talk about that a little bit. And Carrie, I just kind of want to start at the good stuff. Let's talk about why this is good for hospice.
Sure. Thanks, Melanie. Having been in hospice for about 15 years, I see this as a real step forward for a couple of reasons. One, for me personally, when I seek medical care, I have a physician assistant that really is my attending physician. So when this rule went into effect, it really kind of hit personally with me because, the accent probably gives it away that we live in a rural area.
Right.
And even though we have great physicians in this area, my physician works with a physician assistant, and that's who I see on a regular basis. Her name is Lindsay Fretz, and I'm going to use her. That's why, I do have her permission to say her name. But, obviously in rural areas, in other areas where a patient has an attending physician that is a physician assistant, it means equal access for those patients. And, being the hospice advocates that we are, we want all patients to have access to great end-of-life care. So I think that's the biggest positive for this. There's also now payment for physician assistant services, which we can talk about a little bit later. But I see it as bringing physician assistants to the table of hospice, not quite where we ultimately want them, but I think it's a great first step for ensuring that all patients have equal access to hospice care.
Absolutely. And I mean, you think about it, you talk about the rural piece of this. You look at, I just think picture, when I was little, y'all, my aunt gave me a map, a puzzle map of the United States. And so I learned where the states were putting that puzzle together when I was young, and I've always remembered that. So I can just picture that puzzle, and I just kind of in my mind look across the states. Most of the states in our union are rural. I mean, have a lot of rural area. Even when you look at upstate New York, even whenever you look, so there are a lot of rural areas in our country where we need to have access like this or better access. So I love that. So from a hospice perspective, it's good. From a patient perspective, it's really good as well. So you told us some of the good stuff. So let's talk about the challenges, because I know that our audience, they've probably faced some challenges already. They will face some challenges, or at the very least, they have questions about how this moves forward. So talk about that just a little bit, if you will.
Sure. So effective January 1st, so 27 days ago, physician assistants, by nature of CMS moving forward, are now able to act as a patient's attending physician. And so in talking with our clients, Weatherby's clients from all over the country these past 27 days, I want to first talk about what the rule says and then talk about some of the challenges, because those will flow into that. But essentially, based on this, the biggest caveat. Even though patients can choose a physician assistant as their attending physician, there are some state laws that hospices have to take into account. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you look at the state of Maryland, I'll pick them for example. Okay. In the state of Maryland, physician assistants have pretty liberal allowances. They can serve as an attending physician. They can prescribe certain medications. Mm-hmm. So Maryland is actually a state where the federal rule is going to apply. There may be other states that when you look at the physician assistant scope of practice, it prohibits them from serving as an attending physician or prescribing certain medications. So
it's state regulations around PAs, not state regulations around hospice.
Correct.
Okay, all right.
Correct.
Okay.
So it's really a scope of practice issue. Okay. So even if the federal rule says that physician assistants can be attending physicians, First and foremost, hospices want to verify their state's scope of practice for PAs.
Okay.
Now, with that said, because physician assistants are not physicians, they are not allowed to serve as a hospice medical director or a hospice physician.
Okay.
And that's
in any state.
In any state.
Okay.
And that's the same for nurse practitioners. So that's no different.
Right.
Now, where there is a difference is physician assistants cannot perform face-to-face encounters.
Okay.
Now, this is you heard me say earlier, we're not quite where we need to be. And this is one of those reasons. Okay. Nurse practitioners can perform a face-to-face encounter, as well as physicians, but physician assistants are not allowed to perform face-to-face encounters.
Okay.
So it sounds like a lot of knots. And for those reasons, hospices are encountering challenges. So I think it's the way my mind works is to start at the beginning. So I think the greatest challenge is on the election of benefits document.
Okay.
And so when I say election of benefits, I mean the Medicare election form.
That initial certification for 90 days.
Not yet. That's
okay.
the next step.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, this is
I
where,
see what you're saying.
Yes, this is where the patient or their representative actually signs and elects hospice care.
Right.
So on that form, effective October of 2014, I believe, the patient has to designate who his or her attending physician is going to be. And the definition of that is really the person, the professional who is, you know, most involved, most knowledgeable about the patient's care. So on that election of benefits section, on that attending physician section of the EOB, the patient or representative has to designate his or her attending physician. So if the patient, like me, has a physician assistant, we want to make sure that going forward, you can put that physician assistant's name in that attending physician blank.
Right. So yours would say Lindsay.
Mine would say Lindsay Fretz, PA.
Okay.
Yes. So, and the other piece of that that people forget is, you know, patients don't have to elect an attending physician. So that rule still applies. They can elect a physician, they can elect a nurse practitioner, and now patients can elect a physician assistant as his or her attending physician.
Okay.
So that's the best place to start.
Okay.
And we know from a billing perspective and a medical review perspective, whoever is listed as that attending physician, there's also supposed to be a certification, which is what you
were
talking about.
First 90,
But one of the challenges of this new regulation is physician assistants are not allowed to certify a patient as terminally ill. So, you know, hospices say, well, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, essentially, it's the same process as if a patient elected a nurse practitioner as his or her attending physician.
Okay.
So in the case where a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner is elected as the patient's attending physician, because they can't certify terminal illness, that responsibility then falls solely to the hospice physician or the hospice's medical director.
Okay.
And there's a big misconception that hospices have to have two signatures. And that's not a regulation. It's just one signature in this scenario because physician assistants and nurse practitioners cannot certify terminal illness.
Okay.
So that's one of the biggest challenges is just hospice is figuring out how to operationalize that. Because with a physician, it's easy. You know, the attending physician is a physician. You get written certification.
Right.
But if it's a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant, because they can't certify, that responsibility falls to the hospice physician or the hospice medical director.
Okay. All right. Another thing you and I were talking about before, and I think you guys have already had some calls on this, that we fielded here at Weatherby, how does it affect like medication ordering?
Yeah, that's a great question. So when I talked earlier about the state laws that govern the scope of practice for physician assistants, every state has variable scopes of practice. You know, what a PA can do in New York, they may not be able to do in California.
Right.
So hospices have to make sure and check their state's physician assistant scope of practice to make sure that that physician assistant can order medications. And furthermore, because a lot of hospice patients have symptomology that requires controlled medications, like narcotics or mm-hmm. other controlled medications, some states do not allow physician assistants to prescribe sure. those controlled medications.
Right.
So, you know, and really the onus is on the hospice.
Yep.
They can't just hope that a PA can prescribe in their state. You really have to verify that, in fact, they can based on that state scope of practice for
right.
PAs.
Okay.
So if, let's say, for example, a state does not allow a physician assistant to prescribe medications.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, the physician assistant would not be allowed to prescribe medications for a patient, and the responsibility for that prescribing would fall to the hospice mm-hmm. physician or the medical director.
Yeah.
And so we encourage hospices to update their policy and procedure documents for physician assistants to ensure that your policy contains the state scope of practice, because this is a change for hospices.
Mm-hmm.
A good one,
yeah.
But it's going to require some policy and procedure updating, some
right.
you know, additional education for staff.
Okay. How does it affect, I'm thinking about plan of care. How does it affect like collaboration on the plan of care and all of that process?
Yes. So, you know, if you recall with the federal regulations, in terms of the plan of care, a hospice is required to collaborate with the patient's attending physician if they have one.
Mm-hmm.
So as this relates to physician assistants, if they are the patient's chosen attending physician,
mm-hmm.
then the hospice is charged with collaborating with that attending physician, that physician assistant.
Right.
And so, you know, from an education standpoint, from a documentation standpoint, you know, hospices use a lot of ways to show that collaboration. But going forward, if the patient chooses a PA as their attending physician, there will have to be documentary evidence of that collaboration in order to be compliant with the regulatory
right.
requirements.
Okay. So not a lot has changed there. There's just got to be collaboration on either end, whether it's a physician or whether it's, so you're just putting the PA in there.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So when I think about plan of care, I think about IDG meetings.
Yes.
And so how does this affect an IDG?
Yeah, great question. So, again, going back to, you know, we're not quite where we want to be.
Right.
As of today, as of January 1st of 2019, even though a PA can be elected as a patient's attending physician, from a regulatory standpoint, today,
mm-hmm.
a physician assistant is not a core member of the interdisciplinary group.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean they can't attend a meeting. It
right.
doesn't mean that they can't participate in a plan of care. But they're not a core member. And so we just want to make sure that our clients and our HCN members, you know, are staying within the bounds of the regulation because, you know, when you read it, it seems fairly straightforward. But when you start to think about operationalizing this change,
mm-hmm.
a lot of questions come to the surface. And
okay.
the IDG is one of those.
Right. Okay. Last thing I think about is the hospice quality reporting program. How does all that relate to PAs, and how do PAs relate to that?
Yes. So, you know, we talk a lot about quality.
Yes.
And the reason I think this is one of the great changes that's happened is we see the physician assistant being pulled into the quality measures. And what that tells me is that CMS realizes the value of a physician assistant. So, God forbid, if I have to ever elect hospice
mm-hmm.
soon, I always say that thinking something bad is going to happen to me. I hope it doesn't. But, you know, I think that quality is driving, it's going to drive payment, it's going
yes.
to drive a lot of things. And so to have the physician assistant included in the hospice quality reporting measures, I think just shows their value. So when death is imminent, you know, that is one of the quality measures. Measure one, in fact, measures the percentage of patients who received at least one visit from the registered nurse, a physician, a nurse practitioner, or a physician assistant in the last 3 days of life.
Mm.
And I think this is so important because, you know, Melanie, I know you just lost a family member very
right.
close to you.
Right.
I know that your mom was on hospice care.
Yeah.
And when you talk to people, just everyday people, not really hospice people, what really matters at the end of the day is that the family or the caregiver or the significant other or whomever, that they felt supported,
that's right,
and seen and touched and cared for in that very intimate last few days of life.
Right.
And so, you know, and ultimately, if I was choosing a hospice for one of my loved ones, this is a quality measure that would matter to me.
Right.
And so I think including physician assistants, especially as an attending physician or a member of the hospice team, mm-hmm, in this quality reporting measure shows the value of physician assistants. And I think it brings them to the hospice table where they've needed to be for a long time.
Right, right. And it, like you said, and you keep referring to Lindsay, and I know, you know, with my mom in her case, it's a nurse practitioner. Mm-hmm. That's who she feels closest to. She wants to see her. I mean, yeah, she doesn't want to necessarily see the doc. And so I think that it's so good for patients in getting them care from the people that they trust the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Good. So if I'm kind of rolling this up, the things that I've heard you really say a lot are state regs.
Yes.
State regs. So it's on the hospice. The onus is on the hospice to figure out the state regs and to make this work. It's really on the hospice.
It is. Because PA scope of practice, just like any other discipline,
right,
you know, nurse practitioner, they vary from state to state. So
right,
the onus is on the hospice, absolutely.
Right. What else? Anything else that you want to say kind of in wrapping up that our folks need to hear?
Sure. So I think that this change is a positive one. Mm-hmm. I think that hospices probably have some education to do with their staff to understand,
yes,
everything from that election of benefits process all the way through to collaboration on the plan of care. Mm-hmm. I think that policy and procedure updates documents need to be updated.
Updated, yeah. And then
uploaded. Yeah, they're electronic. They need to be updated to reflect the hospice's practice,
right,
as it relates to their use of physician assistants, whether it's attending physician piece, whether it's the quality piece and everything in between.
Right.
You want to make sure that policy and procedure documents are updated. And I think lastly is, you know, realizing the value of a physician assistant and realizing that bringing them into the team is a greater way to have Medicare access, hospice access,
right,
for patients. So I think this is a great change. And frankly, I think we'll see additional changes in the future. But for right now, this is a positive change for hospices and one that is certainly going to impact practice across the country.
Okay, great, great, great. Well, you know, our goal with this, with the HCN, the podcast, and with Weatherby, with everything we provide, is to provide value. And so we hope that today has provided value for everyone listening and that you can take this and you can use it, you could share it with your staff members, and that it can help you going forward. So we want to just be sure that you, you know, continue to trust Weatherby. And like I said, if as long as Weatherby Resources is providing value, we think that you guys will do that. So our next podcast will be in April. And so until then, good day.